If anything makes me quit this podcast, it's gonna be the Boomer.
Come on, man!
I'm gonna take my ball and go home. I'm gonna take my lawnmower and
don't worry. He'll show up next week because he'll forget he was upset.
Oh snap!
That's probably true.
Sora, I need 1 hour of somebody holding down a conversation with myself and Greg, and they should be approaching the age of 60.
Six? Whoa!
Stop tapping your watch on your forehead, Dave.
Yes. For the record, it did not happen.
I think that we have photographic evidence of it.
Yeah. Post it.
Okay.
If you're gonna make that claim, you got to bring the receipts.
Challenge accepted.
Sora, show me Dave tapping his Apple Watch to his forehead.
Wait, is that the AI generator?
Yeah.
Well, don't worry. It'll have me looking like an African American.
Well, no.
Because
that's Gemini.
That's Gemini. Okay.
Yeah, Sora is text to video where you literally say, I want to see puppies playing in the snow. Okay. And within 10 seconds, you've got puppies playing in the snow. And it's high quality video and they look completely real.
I bet you I'd be really good looking in that video.
Perhaps.
Especially if I said Sora, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Sora, have a good looking day. Playing with puppies and touching an Apple Watch to his forehead. My wife would like that because of the puppies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a famous Dave.
Dave Thomas from Wendy's.
There's a lot of famous Daves.
Yeah, it might be better.
The most famous Dave is Dave from the Old Testament, although he goes by Dawid in Greek. Or, you know, because of how the Hebrew script and the vowel pointing, David is how it's pronounced in the Old Testament. But because there's a dot, you could also pronounce it as dude.
Dude. Right?
Because of how, yeah. Dude. So,
dude.
It's okay. I love my name.
Dude. You
can say dude.
Dude. So what's the AI's name?
Sora. S-O-R-A.
Sora.
Show me a picture of dude.
Dude. Playing with grass.
Play with grass? I'm sorry. What is that? Is that some drug reference that I don't understand?
Oh, grass, like in your lawn.
In your lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So picture
the stuff you yell at the kids to stay off of.
My lawn. Yeah. In my lawn.
This is totally what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Dude.
I have a feeling that dude. This is not what you were talking about. But
no.
This is where my 5 year seniority of you, Greg.
You're not old at all, Dave.
I am a Gen X, just for the record.
Okay. Under the wire. Okay, Boomer.
If anything makes me quit this podcast, it's gonna be the Boomer.
Come on, man.
I'm gonna take my ball and go home. I'm gonna take my lawnmower and
Don't worry. He'll show up next week because he'll forget he was upset.
Oh snap.
That's probably true.
Sora, I need 1 hour of somebody holding down a conversation with myself and Greg, and they should be approaching the age of 60.
Six? Whoa!
That just
accelerated.
I know.
My growth, my age, just like, wow. That's brutal. I'm not approaching 50.
Now I'm looking at your computer screen.
Okay.
Sorry, he's got a little more hair than that.
Oh, that's, yeah. I guess. It forgot the goatee.
Okay. Yeah. There we go.
It's the only thing that makes me look a little older is my gray goatee. Handsome gray goatee.
Yep.
Did I tell you the story about how I started to wear a goatee? Sorry, Joanna. Yeah, I'm going to throw you under the bus on this one.
Uh-oh.
Oh, can't wait to hear this.
So she'll appreciate it. Probably around 26, 28 years old, I decide that I can finally grow a goatee and not be embarrassed by it. So I grow the goatee.
So it was like the mid 80s?
No. This is late 90s. Late 90s.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I grow it and she, you can tell she's not happy with me. And then finally she says, Dave, can you just shave that? I go, well, why? She goes, Dave, you look like Robin Hood. Right. That was the accusation. I look like Robin Hood. And I was a little hurt, but I stuck with it. Right. So I ignored it. Knew.
Now, wait a minute. Were you wearing green tights?
For the record, I've never worn green tights.
Okay. What color were they?
Blue.
Okay.
No. Sora, put Dave in the grass with blue tights on.
Yellow shoes.
Okay, I see it. Bells, yeah, all right, go.
With bells on the end of them, like an elf from Lord of the Rings. Anyway, so yeah, so 2 years later, I shave it just as kind of a lark. And she goes, I hate that. Don't you ever shave it again. And I was like, wait, I thought I looked like Robin Hood. And she goes, oh, never mind. So I'm in trouble for telling this story, but it's a true story. And
okay.
She's going to go like, why do you have to tell stories about me?
Okay.
Love you, babe. And I made it doubly worse by saying that last part.
Love you, babe?
No.
Oh.
The last part before the love you, babe, which was, why do you have to tell stories about me?
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Now I just got in trouble third time.
Oh, man. This is bad.
Come on, Dave. Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
My Philly wife.
All right. So we're talking about, what are we talking about?
Cut that part out, dude. What are we talking about?
I don't know.
This podcast, we're not prepared.
We're talking about challenges for the church in the year 2024 and beyond. And this is going to end up being a multi-part series because we had six to go through, and I think we made it through 1.5 on the last episode. So,
hey, that's progress.
It is. It is. Maybe not good progress. So we talked a little bit about theological compromise. Wait, I think, right?
That was as a subheading to doubting the scriptures.
Or doubting the scripture.
Doubting what God says.
So we talked about the inerrancy of scripture and doubting scripture.
Yep.
And
has God really said?
Yeah, has God really said? Same play every time. And we started to talk about political divisions a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So I think we can pick up and talk about that a little bit more because it is an election year as we record this, and the forces of darkness of one party are arrayed against the forces of darkness of the other party, and all the fixins that go with that. Next up on the list, though, I mean, we can talk about that, but I also have changing demographics. So we have some aging folks. We have some boomers. Gen X is approaching late stage middle age. And then
Gen X is late stage middle age?
Yeah.
Ooh. I would agree with
what?
That.
Yeah. It's getting there.
I'm still 30.
55. Yeah. You're not.
I'm still there. 30.
Nice try.
I feel 30.
You don't.
I do. I do. I was having this conversation.
I'm feeling your bicep right now. No, it doesn't feel 30.
Stop touching me, Dave.
Squishy. I feel violated for you.
Okay.
I just poked your bicep.
We'll cut that part.
Well, I'll clip it. I just poked your, and then I can put whatever I want in after that.
And then you could add in
the, I will not approve any of this last part.
You could add in one of those other statements he's made professing his. All right.
Yep.
Oh, that's bad.
I'm not middle-aged.
Okay.
I'm still 30.
All right. Keep telling yourself that.
Okay.
You're like 20 years off, aren't you? 19, 20.
I'm not 20 years off.
Okay. Let them keep thinking that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't sound 30 either. It's not your voice. It's the content and the comportment of your speech.
Comportment.
A swallow in the cream.
Probably don't want to turn off listeners.
Yeah.
With the up talk, I would like the foam on my latte to be in the shape of a heart. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah. No, that's the up talk.
Uptick?
Up talk. It's actually a thing. It's the modern, like, fake West Coast speech of what I was just doing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's uptalk.
I thought it was uptick.
Uptalk.
Uptalk?
No.
People who aren't really certain uptick about what they have to say.
Are you sure?
So when they make statements, like everything. Yeah.
Is this your automobile? I don't know. That was a bad example.
Like, I think I know the answer, but I'm not really sure. I could be right.
It's very annoying.
Uptalk.
It's not uptick for sure.
Okay.
See, I told you, Greg, I do know the lingo. Hmm. I'm hip to that jive. My best jokes are just off the cuff. You can't try to recreate the magic.
These are tears of joy, Greg.
No. Let me introduce you to Sunnydale Retirement Community.
Early retirement for Dave.
Hmm.
Just a reminder, if you're 30, I'm 35. So just remember that.
Yeah. Okay, boomer.
So I will say that Greg could be right because I believe he said he's 30 years old, right? I think a Martian year is about 1.8 Earth years, which would align to about 30.
Okay.
Good thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or you could take
so changing dynamics
two-thirds of 30 and add it to
the... So Gen X is reaching...
But you don't want people to know your real age. Is that what it is? Are you like a woman?
What?
Well, women don't like their age. I don't know too many guys that don't care about their age. Women, they're like, don't tell my age.
So Dave's like on this mission to offend everybody today,
yeah, I think. Ah, man.
He's already got his wife upset with him.
Yep.
He ticked off a bunch of millennials.
Yep.
Just now he's just
like, because of the uptalk? How did I tick off millennials? Other than saying that they have not contributed anything except the meme to our culture.
Hmm.
Just digging a hole.
Yep.
Were we not going for the insulting the millennial demographic this week?
No, that wasn't the intention.
Oh, okay.
In fact, my show notes say they're entering leadership in a lot of organizations now.
Well, at least they can bring some good memes with them.
So, I think the mounting evidence for Dave being a boomer.
You know what? If insulting millennials makes me a boomer, I'll take the mantle.
So yeah, we're actually starting to see millennials and the leading edge of Gen Z starting to enter into areas of leadership or importance in various organizations, including the church.
Is this why we're getting the trampolines and stuff in church?
It was like bread and circus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
Now that's a reference that a lot of millennials won't get. I'm assuming you know the background to that, right, Greg?
Yeah, that's because I used it.
Yes, but I've seen some people use metaphor like purple Kool-Aid. You know, drink the Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
They're like,
right? It's the guy who broke through the wall. Like, hey, jumped through the wall. The big Kool-Aid man.
Oh yeah.
Nice try. I know you know what drinking the purple Kool-Aid refers to.
Okay.
I've never heard of color associated with
it. I've never heard of color
associated. It was actually purple Kool-Aid.
Really?
They drank.
Yeah. Really?
Grape drink.
You sure?
Yeah. No, it was.
100% sure.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh, you were sure and then you had to qualify. Sure.
My whole life I believed it to be purple Kool-Aid. Yeah.
Minutes ago you couldn't remember stop. Tad.
Well, let's go back and what's the historical reference?
It was the
what was the name of the cultist?
I don't remember the name of the cultist.
Jim Jones.
Yeah, Jim Jones.
Mm-hmm. Not John Paul, but Jim. Jim Jones.
Yeah, Jim Jones.
Yeah, and the U.S. government was sending people down to investigate him, and
I believe they killed a senator, didn't they?
They did. They actually murdered him. They didn't make him drink the Kool-Aid.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they realized, they're going to send special forces. Trouble. Yeah. This is it.
Yep. So they did it. Made them drink the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
So, and while we're on, Greg is over here making sure it's purple Kool-Aid. I can't. If it's, I want credit when it says it's purple Kool-Aid.
Right now, my Google isn't Googling.
This whole time, you've been trying to find out.
I have, and the Google's not Googling. Here we go. Right.
See if Bing works.
It wasn't Kool-Aid.
Oh, it was great.
It was Flavor-Aid made by Gelcert.
That's funny, but was it purple?
It was grape flavored.
Ah, so you didn't want to admit it was grape flavored, but
I said it was, you said it was purple flavored. I don't know what purple flavor is. This says it was grape flavored.
So,
but it's not grape drink though.
Wasn't Kool-Aid. We should probably get away from this subject.
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, the part where you were right. You want to make sure that gets
let it be known. Receipts were brought. They done been brought.
Yes. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, Dave.
Yes.
Even a broken clock's right twice a day, Dave.
Could you use jokes that haven't been used like a million times already?
Those aren't jokes. Those are just old, truisms.
Truisms. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Let's all be nice now. Demographics of the church are changing, right? So
that's what this whole conversation's been about that, so far.
Yeah, apparently. So, as the boomers and Gen Xers kind of
age out.
Yep. Yep. Fun to hear about, isn't it?
So when a boomer wants to complain about a millennial, my immediate reaction is like, it's your fault. You raised them.
You raised them more than I did.
Like you brought them up. You the ones who taught them. You the ones who discipled them. Mm-hmm. And like when you talk about Gen Z coming up, Gen X raised the Gen Z. So any problems that you want to have with them, like you raised them. So what did you instill in them? What did you teach them?
So this is going to sound like I'm tooting my own horn. I'm not. I probably just got lucky. I have two that are pretty counter their culture. My daughter is like an anti-Z. Like she's an opposite of a Z.
Isn't she a millennial?
She's right on that line. I'd have to ask her. She's right on that line. I don't know the exact demarcation. She's like that overlapping age, though. She was born in 98. Son was in 95. So she's right on that edge. But she didn't like either of them.
Gen Z, I've got the breakdown here.
And that's can we talk about that premise, though? Because I'm not sure I really buy that premise. Yes, we're responsible for raising our kids. And I do think that part of why my kids are not exactly what their culture is because we tried to teach them to be biblical. Where their culture seems to disagree with the Bible, they seem to be counterculture. So that's something I greatly appreciated about them. At some level, there are social things that we are so subtly taught that I'm not sure we even see them in the moment. Like there's stuff that's really obvious, but like, okay, so we talked about technology in the past year and how much do you really know about the influence of technology on a mindset, the first generation of it?
I think the advent of smart devices caught everybody off guard and it took 10 years before people realized how serious it was.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that parents aren't responsible to raise their kids because that's not my point. But at some level, there is this kind of stuff that's, it's like the hum in a radiator and an old, like an old heating radiator in a house that you stop hearing after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just becomes part of the fabric. And I think some of why generations are different is because of that kind of a cultural reality. If you can't pick that up, if you don't have a really sensitive discernment, you know, structure with filtering those things from a biblical worldview, it's going to be really easy to miss that. I do think there is a sense in which the culture raises your kids too in a way that is so subtle that it's hard for parents to see.
Yeah. There's going to be unavoidable influences. And I think that one of them that gets missed on a lot of folks is shared experiences, right? Technology, the smartphone, all that stuff, very, very real, right? I mean, I'm a tech dude and I can tell you, it influences everything. It influences your thought life. It influences your aspirations. Kids today say, I want to be a YouTuber when I grow up, or I want to be a TikToker when I grow up. It's possible to do it. You can live off that. There are people that do, and actually quite a few people that do. Probably not the best career plan, but it's possible. And that didn't exist 15 years ago. Right. And the other shared experience, the shared experience piece really can't be overlooked. Generation Z is age 10 to 25. And that's where both of my kids are at. And the two big influences that they have are probably the technology piece. I guess the two big influences that they would have would be political strife and COVID.
Do they remember? Does anybody in Gen Z remember not having a cell phone?
I don't think they do.
Because they were so young when phones were just becoming popular.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, my kids do. Like, my kids didn't get cell phones until they were the end of middle school.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that the average 25-year-old today, do they remember a time when cell phones weren't available? That's not the same thing as having a cell phone.
When they weren't available. Yeah. No, they don't know what that is.
Because basically at the end of the millennium, right?
Yeah, by the early 2000s, Blackberries, remember those? Those were fairly common.
Remember my first flip phone.
Damn.
So, wow, as a youth pastor, I remember who the first student in my youth group was who carried a cell phone into youth group. Actually, I'll go back into college.
Yeah.
I remember the first student in Bible college who carried a cell phone into class. And it was almost as if he like was out in the hallway and called somebody and said, "I'm going into class right now. Call me in 4 minutes." And he walked into class and the class started and his phone rang. So that was in 1995. And then
just for the record, that's when I was graduating from seminary.
Cemetery? Yeah.
Good. Seminary.
So yeah, I think I was like a sophomore. I was a junior then by then.
Okay.
And then as a youth pastor, I remember the first high school student who brought a cell phone to youth group. And that would have been around 2001.
Okay.
And then I remember the first middle school student, because we had middle school youth group, and I remember the first middle school student who brought a phone to youth group, and he was actually in sixth grade when he brought it, and that was in 2006.
Yeah. So were you annoyed by cell phones, especially when texting first became popular? Did you find that annoying as a youth pastor?
No, I didn't find that annoying at all.
So one time when I was back on faculty at the Bible College, I was invited to speak to campus ministers for one of their convention type things. And one of the things that I said was, okay, so I really angered the whole director of it because I said the yin and yang of college ministry, right? And he was very offended that I said yin and yang. All I was doing was the push and pull, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway.
Did he understand your background?
I told him my background.
Okay. Yes. And what was that again?
No, I'm not telling you. No, you can say it if you want. But so, if you've been listening for a while, you know why I'm not saying this. So, I mentioned it and I said, here's the thing. You guys get 5 minutes to complain about anything you want about ministering to this generation, right? Because they were kind of a conservative group and they were really going through some growing pains with reference to being culturally relevant because it was a pretty strict, kind of culturally strict background that Baptist churches that they were coming from. And so the biggest complaint that they had was these kids and their cell phones. Like, they don't pay attention. They're on their cell phones. They're not paying attention. They're on their cell phones. Right. And so, you know, my point was, okay, is it a neutral thing? Is the technology neutral or not? You got to make a decision on that. If it's neutral, then there's got to be a way that you can teach them to use it. And how can you use it effectively? And how can you retool your expectations? Right. Because, I mean, at some point, you're either going to get mad at him and blow up and lose him, or you're going to go, okay, how can I use this technology to my advantage? And I even challenged him. And I said, this is way before like those quiz apps and things like that. Right. But I was like, how could you use this technology in a way that's helpful to your ministry with them? And, you know, this is before just look up anything. So I couldn't say, hey, you know, could you have them look up some historical background or whatever? I didn't know how to use the technology because I didn't even have a flip phone then. But I was just, you know, I was just acting like I knew. No, I just was asking questions that I would ask for any technology that's a neutral thing.
Yeah.
So, and I think you talked about using MySpace or what was the first?
So now we're suddenly talking about adapting technology. So like when I think about that student who was in middle school in 2006 and the first high school student 2002. So in that window there, like 2003, 2004, 2005, it was AOL Instant Messenger. Mm-hmm. So these would be now, this is the younger end of what are now millennials. These are our 35-year-olds now. And they would come home from school and they would go to their computer and they would dial up. Most of them were dialing up. Okay. And I would be in my office, and it would be on a night that we had programming. So youth groups tonight, or there's like senior high Bible study, and I would have Instant Messenger open and I would know that school got out and they're going to start coming home. And I would have my copy and paste messages ready to go. And I would see like cool guy 5993 is now online. And I'd click copy, paste, like, hey, don't forget tonight's youth group. I'm really looking forward to seeing you. Hope you bring a friend.
I care about you really by copy and pasting.
But. And yeah. They thought that was the most exciting thing in the world,
right.
That they got a message from me and they would respond. And I would like, and then I would just type like a little personal message back. Mm-hmm. And it was like a really good tool to connect with them and get a personal invitation and to show that you cared and to remind them. And they really responded to that and they loved it. Now, 20 years later, they all have a smartphone, an iPhone or an Android, whatever. They want it so that they can have instant access to everything, but they view everything trying to get a hold of them as an intrusion and an interruption. Like they really get annoyed by emails. For the most part, they're not in a hurry to look at their text messages. Mm, like it's an interruption to them. They want to be able to pick it up and do what they want to do, see what they want to see, but they don't want everybody to be able to bother them and to try to get their attention. So figuring out how to use technology to communicate in the best, most effective, most efficient way is like, it's a big change in that amount of time.
My assumption is every generation has its strengths and weaknesses. I know I'm picking on millennials today so far. So I'm going to say, I haven't figured it out yet, but there's some strengths there. No.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
All you millennials, you know.
And have you ever seen Dave pull out his jitterbug and open it up with those giant numbers on it so you can see them?
Yeah. I don't even know what a jitterbug is. It sounds like it's an old dance, right? So anyway, so every generation has its strengths and weaknesses. And so what we have to do is say, no, this isn't old guy in the lawn saying, hey, you get off my lawn. It's how, and I have to do this with coaching. Mm-hmm. I have to say, as a coach, I can't try to talk to these players like they're millennials. I mean, like they're Gen Xers. Mm-hmm. I've got to find what communicates with them. And then I've got to try to tailor my message in terms of how I say it in a way without compromising the message. But I've got to find what's neutral or strong about that, minimize their weaknesses and maximize their strengths. And I do think that that's one of the challenges for, shall we say, older or Gen X or late Gen X like myself, pastors who have to figure out how to speak to the culture. And I think there's a lot of churches, particularly evangelical churches today, who are trying to reach the Gen Xers, right? They're still trying to reach the Gen Xers. But if we're going to reach the young families, you're talking millennials now.
Yeah.
Right.
I still think that a lot of churches are trying to reach the boomers.
Yeah.
That's
like
fair.
I really still think that a lot of the church model The attractional church model that was invented essentially in the 80s to draw the attention to win over that generation.
You feel like that was boomers or reaching Gen X? Because remember, I'm like late Gen X. And so that was my generation they were reaching. So let me give an example. The music. Like I came out of
you're right on that cusp. You're right on the edge.
Not that
there,
much
Dave.
On the cusp. Stop. So my recollection of how my life has unfolded is that I was really enamored for a while with the kind of the new church growthy stuff because they were the first ones that were open to having music that wasn't just traditional hymns. You know, you could do the choruses when you're in youth group, but in church you had to do the hymns. To take it further, you were evil if you didn't use hymns or if you used like a microphone or background and you had drums, you know, and the bongos in the background was really edgy, right? And so you had to slowly move in toward now, right? So my take on that is that they were really reaching my generation. And I think as my generation is aging out, the boomers who are part of these churches sacrifice their taste in music so that they could reach us. And I'm not so sure that we're still not trying to reach Xers or, in your words, young boomers, shall we say, young boomers. You know, maybe we're off, whatever. One of us is not right. But either way, there's this generation that's sacrificing.
I would say the 50 to 65 year olds.
That's fair.
Is who I would put it at.
55 to 65 or 50 to 65?
50 to 65 year olds.
So you're in that.
I'm not in that.
So, not according to what you said earlier today. By the time this is posted.
I'm not in the 50 to 65 years. Well, you know, somebody could be listening to this at any time and I could be 50 years old by then. But
yeah,
I am not 50 years old.
Okay. You're splitting hairs at this point though.
Yeah. Well, at least I have them to split.
You're not 30. Let's just say. You talk like I'm bald.
That was pretty quick.
I think the youngest guy in the room here has the least amount of hair. Aren't you the youngest, Jen?
Yeah.
Ha ha.
Wow.
You'll change your mind.
Now, you'll change while we're mind. On the subject. And,
you'll change your mind when I take my shirt off.
Please don't.
Oh, the bear come rug. On. Cool.
Just got really uncomfortable.
Yep. Did you know that most bald men still carry a comb? They just can't part with it.
Bam.
Dad joke of the night.
Yeah. That's for your dad.
Dad, that one was for you. I hope you enjoyed that one. Honestly, though, my dad couldn't part with his for a long, at a very young age.
Yeah. You know, part with his comb. I do whenever I go to the barber, I do have the same stylist usually, and I'll be like, "You'll tell me when it's a comb over, right?" She's like, "Yep." I said, "Okay."
You go to a stylist. I go to a barber.
Yeah, I guess it's a barber.
Okay.
So it's I don't know.
So
she probably wouldn't.
I go to a place where like it's only men, and the men cut your hair, and it's like a big testosterone fest in there. It's
good times. So back to the church thing and the. The attractional model and I know when we talked about COVID before and this generation and they immediately see through things and they want authenticity.
Yep.
And when we think about what I described with the millennials and how they used to want to be reached out to with technology, but now they see it as an intrusion. I really think that that a lot of this younger generation that they don't want gimmicks. They don't want tricks. Mm-hmm. They don't want a pony show.
Yep.
A dog faced pony show. Anything like that. They just
no pony soldier shows if you're gonna do that. Dog faced pony soldier show.
Yeah. Here's my ice cream.
They don't want any malarkey either.
Yeah. They just want they want authenticity.
Yeah.
And they want relationships and
yeah. And looking through, again, beyond the technology to the shared experiences of Gen Z and kind of the millennials and to a lesser extent, the Gen Alpha, one would be a lot of them grew up in the post 9/11 era. They don't remember 9/11, but they do remember the forever war in Iraq and Afghanistan that resulted from 9/11. It was fought by a very small, courageous, all-volunteer force at arm's length. Very few Gen Z people or millennials know anyone that actually did any of the fighting or experienced any human cost from it. It was all remote drone warfare.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. Because when I think back to my youth group, there were a lot of kids that went. And there were a lot of people that we knew that went to Afghanistan that.
Yeah. I mean,
that served.
And I know folks too, but to the greater Gen Z millennial population, that is not the shared experience. It was all out there, something that was just going on. Now, a lot of church, you know, more conservative regions and churchgoers do serve in the military. So that's more common there. But I think that the more common Gen Z experience is not knowing someone and not having that.
If you get out of
once you get out of the Bible Belt kind of deal.
Are we in the Bible Belt?
I guess technically we're not. We're
at the edge of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
The next shared experience that hits the radar screen for Gen Z and the older millennials is the 2008 collapse. Now I know that we had shovel-ready jobs and stimulus packages and all that stuff. So it didn't end up being technically a depression, but job loss, institutional collapse, these were all very common experiences. And the third big shared experience was COVID and watching every institution you know, love, and care about turn itself off and send you home. So the other big thing that these generations have, that these younger people that are approaching leadership age and entering leadership is, they don't trust institutions. Now, Gen X was legendary. We were legendary for our cynicism and mistrust of authority, but this is next level. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is absolutely next level, what they went through and their experience with institutions. Mm-hmm. And I think that impacts how they relate to a church. And church institutions that say, "Trust us, right. we can help you. Trust us, we'll be here for you." I think a lot of them just look and go, "Will you be? Were you?"
Yeah, saying it's one thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that kind of ties back into that authenticity piece, mm-hmm. and that's why I think if you're going to have the, I need to kind of finish my story coming out of the worship wars, if you want to call it that, where initially I was very enamored with just the freedom to enjoy like my style of music with Christian words. But as it became more and more kind of hokey, if you want to call it that, I lost, right. And less biblical, right. I lost it lost its shine. And now what at least my kids seem to be looking for is that authenticity in worship. That they would much rather, if they had their druthers, they would much rather have a very solid, theologically, you know, accurate and hymn or chorus, you know, in Be Thou My Vision or like In Christ Alone or something like that, rather than the latest thing off of top 40 Christian music. And done in a way that doesn't feel like it's a show. Mm-hmm. They do not want a rock concert. They want to participate and they want to feel like they're a part of the community singing to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. And I think that's one thing that the evangelical church needs to learn if they're going to continue to reach younger families as they get older.
Go. No, I think the main thing that comes through in all that is they probably have a desire for relationship above anything else, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is one thing, you know, knowing you can trust a person. First of all, establishing that trust is huge. Second of all, knowing that you know, after you establish that you're trustworthy, that you follow through, that's another thing, right?
Right.
And I think that is what's becoming the problem of the formula from the 80s and 90s is it did fuel phenomenal church growth and amazing numbers.
But it wasn't necessarily biblically done church.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
No, it was it was literally marketing knowledge applied to church.
Yeah. Yes. And it's clear now that it did not have staying power and it didn't have depth, because there are some pretty big names from that time and a lot of people from that came, you know, into the faith in that time that, you know, they've fallen away because of an overall lack of accountability, because of a lack of relationship, because of a lack of
discipleship,
all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that reaching Gen Z and millennials, their expectations are going to be very different for worship, for leadership, for what church means, even beyond that. So,
which is kind of ironic, because if you think about Gen X church or late boomer Gen X church, which was a kind of a reaction to the stodgy one style of music only, it turned into, like, it was kind of anti-establishment, which turned into this huge establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, just, you know, think of like Driscoll, right? Brother yeah. Driscoll, who went to start the non-church church in Seattle, ends up having one of the largest mega churches in the States. And it becomes so institutional that it becomes corrupt.
Yeah.
Right. And then, well, then, now, that was actually anti-biblical. Like, it was, yeah. It was, where was the discipleship? Where was the older men teaching the younger men, the older women teaching the younger women? Not to say it never happened in those contexts, but
yeah,
this actually kind of gives us an opportunity to go back to a biblical description of how the church functions.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking of the church as a function and a series of relationships
yeah.
in the church, and that there's shepherding that goes on, that the elder men, you know, teaching the younger men, older women teaching the younger women,
mm-hmm.
and finding those, what seems like maybe to megachurch people, more traditional church values from their past, but what really does resonate with the Z's and millennials.
Yeah. And I think it's closer to the biblical model.
In some ways, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the consumerism that they have, the kind of, you know, the church should be like my cell phone. I can get what I want out of it when I want it.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a little bit problematic.
Agreed.
in my estimation. But that, again, every strength has its weakness, right? Mm-hmm. So if we take every generation with its strengths and weaknesses, at least we can really capitalize on their strength, because their strengths are so lined up with the scriptures as to what a church should be like.
Yeah.
Authentic, real,
yeah.
Humble, relational. Makes me kind of like millennials.
Yeah.
Write that date down. Write that date down.
Dave has come full circle today.
I know. This is better than when Dave quit being a Grinch on Christmas.
It's like his heart grew. Three sizes.
Yeah.
It was like 12 or 7. I think it was 7.
Oh, his memory's still off a bit, but
yeah,
his heart's growing.
I could just hear the song in the back of my head.
What song is that, Dave?
You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch.
Okay, just checking to see if you knew what song played in that movie.
I'm so discouraged right now. I need some encouragement.
I know.
Well, that I was not expecting tonight's conversation today, whenever yeah. this is being listened
yes.
to, this conversation to go this way.
Yeah.
This was pleasant.
Okay. So we talked about this all. So now what does it look like in the church? Like, how does this play out? Because I think what we have a tendency of is the boomers have been running the church. Gen X has taken over mostly and is running the church. What does this look like for the next generation? Because I don't think that that's how it should be. I think that, like, believers should come in and they should be involved and they should be allowed to serve and to grow as they're gifted, even when they're not doing it perfectly. And you come alongside of them and you walk with them in doing that. And,
yeah.
And I think that we have a tendency to hold people back and say, eh, not yet. You're not old enough yet. You're not ready yet. And I'm not trying at all to advocate laying hands on people too early, but
good, because that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, no, I'm not advocating that at all. But what I'm saying is being deliberate about coming alongside younger people and like actually really discipling them, yeah, more than just come and sit in this class and you will grow.
Yeah. I think, hold on. I had a thought.
All right.
Oh,
it's happening to you too.
Wait a second.
Wait a minute.
Aren't you the youngest guy in the room?
What? What's that?
Aren't you the youngest guy in the clearly the worst hearing in the room.
Today's episode of Catfish is brought to you by Blue Emu.
Who's Johnny Bench? Gosh. Yeah. So that's interesting, because I do agree with you, Greg. And we can, once you remember.
I got it.
Okay. We'll go to you and then.
I think what this looks like going forward ultimately is very similar to a conversation that my wife and I had as the whole country turned itself off over the course of a week for COVID, right? It went quick.
So you're happening in a week. I was like, not just for a week though.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
For 9 months.
It was just 3 weeks. We were supposed to like pause.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 weeks to flatten the curve, boys. Yeah. Here we go. Okay. No, but it took about a week from, you know, the first big shutdowns to everything being ghost town. I remember my wife asked me, what are businesses going to do? And I said, if you don't have your poop in a group, you ain't going to make it. If you were borrowing and had massive revolving credit lines to make payroll, you're going to be done very quickly. And I think that's how the churches are going to be. Because if you're completely reliant on this seeker-sensitive model to just draw people in and run them through the machine, you ain't going to make it when this new generation comes up. Because that isn't what they want, and they're not going to have it.
Yeah, I think you probably made a really good point, but I'm still trying to remember what you said about poop in a scoop.
Poop in a group.
Poop in a group. Okay.
Have your stuff together.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Have your house in order.
House in order. Okay. That was just such an odd metaphor there. I was like, okay. So, but I actually do agree with your point.
Yeah.
That and churches have, right? I mean, I've talked to numerous people who are like, oh, what church do you go to? Oh, well, I don't really go anymore. You know, after COVID, I was just like, oh, I guess I don't really need this. Insert Paul Washer here, Greg.
Possibly we could.
Probably not truly Christians.
I wasn't ready with a Paul Washer quote for you.
It's okay. I forgive you.
But no, the point is that as you know, the current two generations that are basically running churches age out and move on, churches had better be ready with a relational ministry, that they'd better know how to disciple. They'd better know how to mentor, because
show hospitality.
Yes. Personal ministry is going to be ball game going into this, because I stand by, I don't think the up and coming generations have any trust of institutional anything right now.
And ironically, I think not speaking to hard issues and like not fudging, but like hemming and hawing if something like an LGBTQ issue comes up will not resonate. I think they would rather have somebody be forthright and speak what they believe is truth about the topic. That's going to turn off a lot of people, but I think it's going to actually, believers are going to resonate with that. And I think the wishy-washy churches are the ones that are going to lose out.
Yep.
The ones that are too afraid to speak forthright.
And I stand by that, because I think on so many issues that people are looking for answers, and they're going to test the waters on a lot of things, and they're going to try all the different flavors. And there are people who are eventually going to come around to the truth. And when they do, they're going to look at the people who stood by the truth the whole time and say, those are the people I want to be with because they were saying the right thing the whole time. Mm. The people who weren't saying the right thing the whole time, they're not going to look favorably on those people. And on whatever issue it is that you're not willing to take to speak clearly on. And right now, I think the biggest issue facing the church that we need to speak clearly on is gender, sexuality,
marriage.
And marriage. Mm-hmm. If you are not crystal clear on that, when this confusion starts to become clear to people in 5 years, 10 years down the road, when all of this medical mayhem starts to get sorted out and people realize what a mistake it's been, they're going to look at churches, quote, churches that were on the wrong side, and they're going to want nothing to do with them. But the churches that stood on the right side and stood for truth are the ones that are going to be rewarded in the end.
I would agree.
Yeah, and I think God will do that rewarding too with that.
Yeah.
So I think another kind of applicational issue is, you know, I think of this as an elder. You know, the elders
much, need much to be elder than me.
Elder as in not old, but elder as in church leadership elder. As an elder or as elders, we need to not, like you said, don't lay on hands on people too quickly. Actually, as we're discipling, learn the culture from the younger guys. And so I've generally, you know, met with one or two people that are younger men for the last 15 years or so. And I think I've learned a lot from them in ways that maybe they would never even know they taught me. And that's been a really helpful thing. So discipleship is a mutual friendship where, yes, there is an older one who's got more experience and more knowledge of the scriptures, hopefully, but there's also a kind of a mutual learning that happens. And I think, you know, it does help for me that I do hang out around a lot of college students because of my job. And so that helps me keep up the culture a little bit. But yeah, anyway, so I do think if we're talking about how do we transition leadership from, you know, early boomers to late, from early boomers and late Gen Xers to young Gen Xers to Zs and millennials, you know, you're going to have that transition that needs to take place. And it's going to have to be it's either going to be breakaway church plants, like was really popular during the Gen X, you know, era, or it's going to be slow, deliberate transition that's thoughtful and biblical.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to go for. So, you know, going back to that discipleship, mentoring, shepherding, developing, you know, finding young men who are ready to lead in the future, mm-hmm. and bringing them along the way Paul commands us to do it. So,
tune in next time.
we hit that topic hard.
Thanks for joining us at Catfish Ministries. We hope you learned something with us and maybe had a laugh or two while you're at it. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. If you really like what you heard and want to help us make more of these, look us up on buymeacoffee.com. We can't wait to talk to you again next time. This is Chad for Greg and Dave signing off and saying, remember, America, it's always a great day to get catfished.